Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Caleb Korfar, JD Bunkus. We're joined now. Yeah, JD, we've been trying to signal you for a little while that we were back. We got the chat going. We're waving at you. That's okay, because we got your usual, the times you've been off. We've tagged in Justin Cuthbert to come in, NHL writer, for senior NHL writer for Yahoo Sports. So while you figure out your headphones, we'll tag Justin Cuthbert in again. Good morning, man. What's up? How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm pretty good. I got the personalized intro music coming in. I mean, that big guy behind the glass is he's just a delight. Good to be back on with you guys.
The big question
behind
is
the glass. Wow, way to learn our people's names when you were filling in on the show. This is tough. This is a tough look for you.
I said that Vic guy.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you said guy behind. I just connected. I didn't know we were on the show yet. I did not.
It's
professional.
Been a rough hour.
They're talking to me about how I gotta jump on the show. I'm just sitting here living in fear of Ailish potentially giving me a wrong pick because I just put an irresponsible amount of money on a women's hockey game that involves Russia and Switzerland.
Yeah, so baby. Ailish,
like, you better come through for me. You better come through, insider, because I'm going to be sour if this doesn't hit. I'm going to remind you of it for the rest of your life.
All right.
Hey, I was listening before the intro music, too, and I placed that same bet. So I'm all in on this one, Ailish.
I was going to ask, Justin, you came on, you did a couple days with us when JD was off around Christmas in week three of the Wake and Rake's existence. And I remember you saying after that, you'd been tailing the Wake and Rake a little bit. You still cashing in on this or what?
I definitely am, though. But there's one thing I should bring up, because there was a time when the Wake and Rake wasn't as hot. And you guys were trying to find some reasons why, maybe blaming each other, not wanting to blame each other, and blaming others that had contributed. I think Cool Bet Chris
was
a little harder.
Yeah, you were
than
one that we blame, for sure.
My 1-1 record, I mean, we got one win. If I'm going 50% when I'm involved, I mean, you can't blame the other people that have contributed. You guys were fighting a little bit at the time, but you've been really hot lately. And
we can blame Cool Bet Chris. Cool Bet Chris is 1-3. When he comes on, that's we can throw some.
Don't ever forget that Cool Bet Chris works for Cool Bet. You know, the guy is a sleeper cell. He's bringing him in. We're betting on a Russia game today. That's my biggest fear in this Russia game, is just someone goes out there and goes, "Hey, comrades, we're throwing this game," and they're like, "Of course we are. There's lots of money on Russia. We have to lose the other way." Okay, we'll cheat. It's part of DNA. That's the same thing with Chris. Sleeper cell, the comrade. You don't know where he is. You can't ever trust whether he's behind enemy lines or whatever, because he's working for the books.
I mean, that makes a ton
of sense. The case. Not the case with you, though. You know, you can be trusted. You're part of the circle of trust. 1-1, you're in the circle of trust.
1-1, I think, was acceptable. I didn't quite, you know, maybe I didn't understand the assignment fully. I mean, it's just to put a pick in. But, you know, I've learned that you can be a little bit more safe. You can float towards the minus 200s when need be. And maybe I was just trying to make too big of a splash at the time. So if I'm on again, I'll learn from it and I'll be a better Wake and Rake player.
So did you learn the assignment this time? We're talking about Leafs at the break and things that are on our minds heading into this thing. And, yeah, the All-Star game, nice and calm. The time where, we get to everybody be happy and celebrate Austin Matthews and Jack Campbell. But, Justin Cuthbert, we will start with you, our guest. As the Leafs head into this break, this other mini break, another week off, what is on your mind when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs at the break?
Well, it's been sort of difficult, right? Because this team came in with the backdrop of, okay, they can't prove anything this regular season. And we knew exactly who they are. We didn't know some of the, you know, what would Tasha be, what would Kemp be. We didn't know a lot of those things. And so I feel like I'm a little bit resistant to make these grand proclamations, because how often has that blown up in your face when everything changes and it comes the postseason and things stay exactly the same? But one thing, and I don't know if I fully fleshed this idea out, but one thing I'm noticing is that roles maybe are as defined as they've ever been. Like, responsibilities clearly divvied up, portioned out more so than they've ever been. And what I mean by that is maybe there's less ambiguity when it comes to ownership over, like, everything with this team. And I think Dubas and Keith have done a really good job contributing to this. I mean, I mentioned Kasha, Bunting, Kemp. They're brought in, and now they're doing very specific things for the Maple Leafs. But where I'm seeing it the most, and where it's most important, of course, is with the core four. And there have been some, like, awkward, delicate dances involving these players in the last 3-4 years, right? Like the captain thing, that was weird 2.5 years ago. We all thought it was going to be Austin Matthews, and then something happened with Austin Matthews, and it wound up being John Tavares, the Marner contract. That was weird, and I think it took a little bit of time for that to reduce from a boil. We got John Tavares, who's trying to figure out maybe what player he's going to be in the back nine of his career, and of course there's been frustration with William Nylander. But those four players now more than ever, it seems, or at least I'm seeing, seem to know what's what. And Austin Matthews never had that problem, oozing confidence, of course. But it has been an issue with Marner, who all of a sudden is scoring a ton of goals, but maybe he understands still that that's not him and that it's okay to be the best passer in the league. And maybe John Tavares is finding out that it's okay to be maybe not the most dynamic elite player that he once was. And, of course, William Nylander figuring out, you know, how to be the weapon without the yeah buts. Like, look what he's doing defensively. So I think these four players, we know it's going to come down to these four players, right? We always say that. How are they going to perform in the playoffs? Well, if they understand themselves more than they ever have, maybe that should portend good things. I don't know if that's – I don't know what you guys think about that, but I feel like these four players have figured something out.
The thing that I don't know that we figured out is what is the best – iteration of those two lines, and Sheldon Keefe's been playing around with it a little bit, and so JD threw out to us, hey, think of a Leaf thought at the break, and mine is a little bit more recency bias, but it's related to what you kind of laid out there about those guys figuring it out, and it's that the Marner's Matthews Bunting line at even strength has maybe the best numbers of any line in the entire NHL. They played 163 minutes together, 69 shot attempts per 60, which is the same as the McDavid-Leon Draisaitl pairing, 6.3 goals per 60, which is like class of the league. And the only line that compares by expected goals is the Marchand-Bergeron line. So I'll frame this to you as a question, Justin, because I'm curious if you think they stick with it or they could go back to Tavares Marner. But my Leaf thought at the break was when Marner is playing at this level, that Marner Matthews Bunting line is the blank best line in the NHL.
Ooh. It's high up there. It's probably top five, honestly. And you mentioned that you don't know whether Marner's going to drop down and play with Tavares. I think it's silly to even suggest it, because what I'm sort of saying with roles clearly defined, it could not be more obvious on the top line that roles are clearly defined. Michael Bunting is the player to play with Austin Matthews. And Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner have this chemistry, which is, as you mentioned, sort of unparalleled. Like, there are other great partnerships around the league, but are they clicking right now like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner? Since those two have, you know, gotten back together here after the pause and after Marner getting back from COVID, they've been absolutely unbelievable. It's maybe the best passer in the game with the best goal scorer in the game, and I'm not sure why you would ever switch that up. And I think, you know, we just saw a change in the lines. We just saw that it didn't quite work immediately, and maybe we just saw a reason why to never mess up a good thing, because those two are the most important players on this team, and those two have the sort of partnership that should be what takes this team to the next level. I think that they can hit that next tier, right? Like, we're talking about the best lines in the league. We've always brought up Boston. We've always brought up Colorado. I think those two, with the right third, can get right into that conversation, and there's no reason really to mess with it.
Yeah, so I really like the roles defined, because it makes me think of two different things. One is, that feels like the case with the forward groups. I am curious to see how that does play out, though, after the break, as we head into this stretch where Jack Campbell has been a little shaky, and Mrazek hasn't been much better, but he has been a little better, and you're going to end up having a real true split. And where do we end up at the end of February with those two goaltenders? It also makes me think about the blue line, where I say the roles are defined for the top two guys. Brody and Riley are very, very clearly good. What is the role going to be if Jake Muzzin can't get himself healthy for the rest of that blue line? What is the role of Kyle Dubas and Brandon Pridham here in terms of them bringing in another piece? But with the forward groups, yes, 100%. You have it. It is locked in. Blake's point about the Marner-Matthews line, I guess to me the only thing of, hey, why you would break those guys up or why you would take the longer look with Tavares is just simply because you know you have that. And it doesn't really, as good as that line has been, where you say, yes, they're the blank whatever line in hockey. Everyone, and it's not unfair to do this. Whenever you bring it up, the natural counter is always, yeah, of course, they do that in the regular season. Now they need to do it in the playoffs. They need to do it together in the playoffs. I would like a little bit more certainty of, hey, what does it look like if you do have to break them up? Hey, give me some more repetitions. Use these things as practice. So I don't really care either way, but I think that, yes, what your point about adding something to the second line, that's a big one in terms of what a lot of people are starting to shift their focus on, not just including the blue line. So that brings me to, I'll do my thing here, which is, I'm thinking about Sheldon Keefe, the nitpicker. Sheldon Keefe, the guy who has a really tough time letting the small things go. How is this team going to deal with Keefe down the stretch, down the second half of the season? Because we ended up seeing that Amazon series, and we've heard from anybody who knows Sheldon Keefe, as he is a guy who pays attention to the smallest of details. He is someone who spends a lot of time in front of cameras and in front of microphones and fields a lot of questions about his team and has already had moments this year where he's brought up his disappointment with a group that has not really had a lot of disappointing moments when it comes to the regular season so far this year. And I am curious to see how his team locks in with Keefe, how they lock into the end of the season, where if they are continuing as front runners and this guy is preaching to them about habits and picking apart the small details, how his group is going to respond to that and how his group is going to dial into his line of thinking.
Well, I think Sheldon Keefe is right to point out the small details right now.
So I
mean, this team is playing 700 plus hockey, and it doesn't seem like it's that dominant, right? And I think that's a theme across the league. Like, there's a handful of teams that are on pace for, what, 115, 120, 125 points. But do they seem historically great? Do they seem historically dominant? I don't see that. I just see a lot of mediocrity, and I see a select amount of teams that are taking advantage of that, and the Leafs are one of them. One thing, I think Keefe is a really good coach. I really do. But one thing that doesn't seem to be working as well as it should is his ability to send messages when things are not going well. Clearly we've seen that in you know, with the all or nothing in the postseason. They haven't been able to stop the slide. And I don't know if we learned anything from that series. I don't know if we learned anything from one clip chosen, cut, and shared on a streaming platform. Like, it looked great in the moment. It looked like this rousing speech that would work in the moment, but of course it didn't. But also, it wasn't the entire story. And we look back at the start of the year when they couldn't stop the early slide, and it required some pretty special things. I remember the Tampa Bay game where Jack Campbell just stood on his head, kept them in that game. They won that game eventually in overtime, and that started to turn the tide for them after that Chicago win. I wonder what his role is and how he might change things when the Leafs aren't doing things very well. I think he's able to coach when things are going well and nitpick and get the message across. He maybe went a little too far once saying that it was soft or that team was soft, and maybe that the organization didn't like those choice of words, and he started the next press conference by sort of apologizing or clarifying what he meant. It's pretty clear what he meant. He meant he thought they were soft. But when things are going really poorly, we haven't seen them dig themselves out of it yet. And part of that is on the coach, and part of that is on the mentality, and that, of course, is massaged by the coach. So I think that's what he still has to prove. But in terms of coaching a 700 hockey team, I think he does a really good job.
So my thought about the Leafs at the break has to do kind of with how Sheldon Keefe is going to handle the balance between Mrazek and Campbell down the stretch, between keeping them both happy, keeping them rested, having a good balance and a routine, keeping Campbell in his rhythm and his groove that we saw he got out of. I guess my question to you is what would you do in that situation after the break? Are you trying to give Mrazek more of the load after this kind of heavy February that's about to happen? Are you going to ride with Campbell and give him the confidence he needs? How does Keefe kind of approach this?
Yeah, I think there's two priorities, and I think the usage probably hits both of them. I think you got to play Jack Campbell as much as deemed necessary to keep him fresh. I mean, we saw him, not even just fresh, keep him in rhythm. Because earlier in the year when he was playing all the time and not having to think about it, he was the guy because there was no other option. He was at his best. He was in a rhythm. And of course things got disrupted by, you know, the COVID Christmas and all that and a break in the schedule. But maybe he played a little bit too much and he couldn't start the engine on the other side as much or as efficiently as he wanted to. So I feel like they've got to really find that balance with him, whether it's playing the same amount, like, you know, same amount of rest days, so on and so forth. Getting Campbell right is the most important thing. That's priority number one. And of course, that you, how much you're using Mrazek is going to dictate what you're going to do with Campbell. But I think you're going to get more Mrazek starts because you're trying to find the right balance with Campbell. And in doing that, I think you're going to be able to showcase him a little bit more. If you play really well in front of Peter Mrazek, it might solve your problem this summer because they're going to need to get out from underneath that contract if they're going to extend their partnership with Jack Campbell. So if everything goes right, Jack Campbell plays maybe 55-60% of the games, plays very, very well. There's confidence in him going into the playoffs. And Peter Mrazek wins a ton of games for this team, and a team like maybe the Edmonton Oilers or another team looking for goaltending swoops in, gladly takes that $3.8 million, and you can sign Jack Campbell in the offseason because I don't know if they can tie up $8 million worth of goaltenders and move forward. I just don't think that's possible. So I think both, you know, with your usage, with a more evenly distributed sort of balance between the two, I think you can achieve both priorities.
Yeah, the lucky thing for the Leafs here is that the schedule breaks their way, where to me this is the easiest part of the second half, at least to start it. Like, you have this February that's jam-packed with games, which is going to force you to play both guys basically somewhat equally. You're not going to be able to just load up on Jack's plate. When you come out of it, I think the hope for the Leafs is sort of what you just outlined there, Cuthbert, which is that Mrazek looks good, that he looks like a piece that not only you trust going into the playoffs this year if you do need him, but also someone that if you need to move him this offseason is not only just a guy that you can move in a lateral move, but is someone that is actually attractive to another franchise. Like, his contract is a good contract to another franchise. Ultimately, though, this team is only going so far as the goaltending takes them. That's everybody in the playoffs, and that's what makes hockey so stupid, is that you get into all these things, you spend the entire year talking about all this stuff, and then a goalie lets in a couple bad goals, and you go, well, we just watched 82 games in this playoff series, and then Jack Campbell didn't play right well at the right time, and now it's all over. Now it's all done, and we're blaming him. But, yeah, it's all about making sure Jack Campbell is right for the stretch run, because he needs to be the Jack Campbell from the first half of this season. And because if he's not All-Star Jack, that stuff that you pointed to about this team not feeling like they're a juggernaut or they're not this unbelievable team or this historic team, I think that ends up biting you in the ass come playoff time. That ends up haunting you come playoff time.
Well, and we mentioned this sort of conversation hinged on the idea that roles are being defined. And yeah, Jack Campbell's that number one, of course, and needs to play like it. But the pitfalls are potentially there and clearly defined as well. And we've been sort of dancing around the subject of that defense corps, which clearly needs a boost. I mean, you mentioned the top two, TJ Brody and Morgan Rielly. Yeah, you feel confident there, but they're going to be playing a lot of hockey. They might be overworked. They might be out of rhythm because they're going to have to do so much when it matters the most. This team clearly needs to add at the deadline to that defense corps if they're going to be able to protect Jack Campbell. And I think one of the big storylines of this season, overarching themes, when you're looking at Kyle Dubas, is he went out in the offseason and made some incredible moves, cost-effective moves, guys that fit perfectly into this system. But when he finds cost-effective players, it seems to only be forwards. He hasn't found that magic and that formula when it comes to the defensive core. Zach Bogosian's been the closest thing to it so far. They need to do the same thing on defense as they've done up front. And perhaps the failure to do that might end up being the failure of this team in the end, because we don't know what's going to happen with Jake Muzzin. We don't know if TJ Brody and Morgan Rielly can play 35 minutes a night. It's a big issue right now, and there's not much flexibility. So all that brain power that went into gutting Kampf and Kasha and Bunting, they need to show a little bit more of it and find a solution on the back end that's going to work, and maybe multiple solutions.
So that leads perfectly into my second big question about the Leafs heading into the second half of the season is, Yes, the back end is shaky for sure. And if they are able to add a defense at the deadline, that's great. But nonetheless, I still think that somebody needs to be able to step up and play meaningful minutes from Liljegren, Sandin, and Dermott if they're going to have a shot at, you know, having a lengthy postseason. Out of those three, who is the most likely to actually be able to increase their load, increase their I don't know, impact on the team if they needed to?
I have the most belief in Rasmus Sandin out of the three. But it's tricky, right? Because it depends on what the role is. Can Rasmus Sandin move up and play second pairing minutes? I actually have more confidence in Timothy Liljegren to do that just based on exactly how this team is assembled. But if I'm leaning into one and need one to play really good in a certain specified role and a role that's meant for them, I think Rasmus Sandin can be a difference maker on the third pairing. Travis Dermott has lost my confidence, at least, and I think most of the fan base's confidence. I just don't see how, after all these years and all these games and opportunities, that it's ever really going to click. And I think this is too much, ultimately too soon, for Timothy Liljegren, and probably wouldn't work for an extended period of time in a big role. But I think he's shown in spots or in flashes or with the right partner, be it a Jake Muzzin, that he can hang for a little bit. But that's the situation, right? There's not one of the three that you're really excited about in terms of the right now. And that tells you all you need to know. The fact that this team fancies itself a Stanley Cup contender, it can't with the current orchestration on the back end. It's just not good enough at this moment. And these players are just not ready for that type of thing. And frankly, I don't know if Justin Hall is ready for that. I don't know if he's ready for second pairing minutes in the playoffs right now. I think if they got someone to bump everyone back into their proper slot, maybe two to help bump everyone back into the proper slot, we'd be thinking a lot differently about this defense corps. But right now, it seems like everyone's just overextending themselves a little bit, aside from the top two.
Justin, we've known each other a little while now, right?
It's been a bit.
Did you think you could slide something by me, numbers related, that I wouldn't have receipts for? Your two picks when you chipped in on the Wake and Rake, -167 and -157 lines. Don't be trying to frame that as you were risk taking and you know, trying to make a splash or anything like that. I just had to put a risk taker and let you go.
Yeah. I forgot about the spreadsheet. I forgot about the spreadsheet.
Never, that's the thing with me. You can never forget about the spreadsheet with me.
I don't remember my winning pick. My losing pick, rather. I remember my winning pick, which is a sweat, too. It was Washington over the Nashville Predators, which in hindsight, at -160, well, maybe looked good then. Not so good now.
Yeah, you lost on a Lightning game, but whatever. We all take losses. These guys get on me because I frame it as I'm exploring the process of how I got something wrong. They call it excuse making. to me, it's just exploring the process. Sorry to have to do that to you, man. This was great. I really appreciate you taking the time. Hope you get a little time to yourself over this All-Star break. Or who knows? Maybe you just take the NHL's lead and spend the weekend playing blackjack. Who knows? Have a good one, man. Thanks so much for this.
Appreciate it, guys. It was fun watching Ailish's close circle of friends win a big game last night.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Yeah. I'm glad you stayed up for that.
Yeah, glad they came through in hockey after they didn't come through in our big family feud parlay. So, yeah. Thanks, Justin. Justin
appreciate
Cuthbert,
it, guys.
Senior,
talk soon.
Senior NHL writer, Yahoo Sports, at JT Cuthbert on Twitter. Give him a follow there. We should take a break. We've got Craig Forrest coming up next.
Stay up.
What's that?
He had to stay up and watch that entire game.
He did. He wrote about it, and I read it this morning. Like, what a good guy. He stayed up, watched the whole 12-1 slamming, and then had to write a paper or article about it. Good for him.
And then I can't even get his Twitter handle right.
You think that he did stay up, or do you think that what's the score? What's the score in a game where you just decide, you know what, that's enough?
It was like 4-0 after the first period. I think that did it for me.
Yeah, that's
So unless he has editing privileges or like a really favorable editor for him, he stayed up. The byline went up at 2:01 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So credit where it's due. And it's JC Cuthbert on Twitter, by the way, not JT Cuthbert. My bad for that. Sorry to Justin. Let's take a break. Let's bring in Craig Forrest, former goalkeeper for the Canadian men's national team and co-host of the Footy Prime podcast. Canada, magic number down to almost decimal points to qualify for the World Cup. I will talk about that with Craig next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out the podcast if you missed any of the segments earlier. We had Maurice Jones-Drew on the show. We talked Raptors trades with Michael Grange, had Justin Cuthbert on, a bunch of good stuff. We also talked about Canada soccer off the top because obviously that was the big story last night. And it's time once again for Canada's Quest, presented by CertainTeed. This look at the Canadian men's national soccer team is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. To help us sort through a 3-0-0 window here and look at just what this moment means for Canadian soccer, former goalkeeper of the men's national team, current co-host of the Footy Prime podcast, Craig Forrest. Good morning, man. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, riding high off another victory last night, 9 points in this window, Canada's magic number down to scenarios so small it's not even worth going into where they don't clinch. Man, how high are you riding having been with this program and watching them, you know, take care of business to this degree, still undefeated here through 15 matches?
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. You know, when we watched that game last night, it wasn't the best, but there's a bunch of factors that go into that as well. And one of them would be travel, either in Honduras first, then you come back to Hamilton and the temperature changes. All three surfaces are different. Then you go back to another warmer temperature. A lot of talk prior to the game about the El Salvador team saying that they've been paid and they're not going to play. So CONCACAF and FIFA were involved. I was talking to some officials there. But at the end of the day, the players also knew the risk of pulling that off. The sanctions would have been absolutely huge. And even though I sympathized with the players of El Salvador because their federation is an absolute gong show historically and they get shafted regularly, this wasn't the way to go about it. They'd come down hard. They'd bring the hammer down on them. So the best thing was to do was to play the game, but at least they brought some attention to it, to themselves about that. So for them, that game and the chance of the World Cup was never going to be there. The restrictions of COVID have helped as well for the team playing in these really most difficult places and having, you know, half crowds. So that's helped as well. But they were tired last night and they looked it. But they got the job done. So it wasn't about being pretty or doing it in fashion. It was about just getting it done. And then when Atiba Hutchinson's goal went in, I'm like, I think the stars have aligned. I just don't think that things are going to go against us. I don't think anything has. There's not been a bad call. There hasn't been a bad bounce. It's been just about perfect all the way through, which is just maybe payback for all those years of
30 years of karma.
30 years of karma.
Yeah, see, it's incredible though, man. And I got to tell you, Craig, one of my favorite things right now is hearing guys like you speak, right? We had Dwayne DiRosario on the other day, and hearing him just be able to celebrate beating the United States and us making fun of that, of their program, and them whining and them being front runners. And, you know, I stuck around with the coverage yesterday to watch Ian Hume speak, and he's obviously emotional just discussing it. And it's just over and over and over again where it feels like, yeah, things are breaking Canada. Canada Soccer's way, and it's so encouraging and it's so fun, and everyone's on the bandwagon, right? Like, it doesn't matter where they put these games on TV now. They're doing over 1 million people. You can pack stadiums. There's a completely different vibe around Canada Soccer and the men's program right now. It's incredible the tilt that has happened here. And something that I raised off the top of the show is just how, hey, we really need to enjoy this. And I don't mean to say let's never expect more from the Canadian national program, but this really does feel like our World Cup here. They haven't lost a game. They haven't had this bad bounce. The team is so likable. There's huge saves from Borjan every game. They're doing this without Davies. They're having all these young stars emerge. Some of the veteran players like Atiba Hutchinson are getting their shine and their due. Like, I don't know, man. It's kind of hard not to put it this way. It feels like we should just be living in the moment, because this might be the best it ever is.
You know, I couldn't have put it better myself. You absolutely nailed it. We should enjoy it, and we are going to enjoy it, of course. And one of the great things about this is because just think of the momentum in the game for the next 8-10 years, guaranteed. We've got 2026. We're gonna go to this World Cup. You're gonna build on that, and then all of a sudden, oh, okay, we're gonna actually have games. We're gonna be a host of the World Cup in 2026, and the momentum that's gonna build into that. And then with the expansion to 48 teams, Canada is never not going to make the World Cup ever again. Qualifying, this is the last most difficult qualifying we'll ever have. Prior to this, I mean, it was, when you go back, people educated want to be educated a little bit about sort of what we were in, the problems that we had were that we, you know, qualifying for 94, for instance, there's only one automatic spot. So we were tied with Mexico going to the last game of the Hex, and it was in Toronto, and we beat them. We would have been straight in the World Cup. However, there's a lot of things around that when, you know, FIFA didn't want us there, of course. Not saying that there was any shenanigans, but there probably was. I mean, we wanted the pitch narrowed like it was in Hamilton, for instance. We got to the game and it wasn't narrowed. In fact, I think it was a little bit wider. So even in our own country, we just couldn't get anything done to give us an advantage in any sort of way. But Mexico are a bigger or more followed national team in the United States in 94 than the U.S. national team itself. So they could not afford Mexico not being there. So these are challenges. So we finished second in CONCACAF and got nothing for that. So the 3.5 spots was what I was really looking forward to, is playing to give us an absolute shot. And then in the future, we're going to have as many as 10 CONCACAF teams. So a little bit different. And then also with the three guys I want to name right at the top, Sepp Blatter, Jack Warner, Chuck Blazer, all up corruption, match fixing, racketeering, allegedly, because Jack Warner is trying to be extradited from the United States, or from Trinidad and Tobago, and that's not happened yet. But we hope it does in the future. But this is the momentum that I'm talking about that's going to be just great, and it'll be a game changer forever.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm slightly sour about, the only thing, is that this is going to be a World Cup that's played in November, and we're not going to get the full just summer takeover experience where downtown is loaded up and everybody's just getting to celebrate together. It's going to be the weird World Cup. Of course, this is what it leads to, where they play in Qatar in the wintertime.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the thing with that, too, I mean, there's nothing that's not weird about our world right now anyway, is there? I mean, everything is weird. It doesn't make sense.
Bad.
Yeah. Sure, why not have a guitar?
yeah, exactly. So the other guy I got to ask you about is just Borjan, man. Like the amount of incredible saves. And even last night, I thought that one was good. The one from distance where it's sort of a sleepy game and there's not a lot of action going on. And it's like, wow, how are you reacting to something that I'm guessing for him, the one I'm talking about, the strike from very far out late in the game where it's got to be coming closer to you as a keeper. And you're going, wait, is that this close? It can't be. And then you got to react last second and make that save. But what have you just made of him so far? Because it has just been night after night after night where there has been spectacular play from him.
Absolutely. I don't think he's ever played any better. There was concerns about our defense and our goalkeeper going in, if anything, because we had terrific attacking players. And that pace, by the way, up front, always always is going to give you an opportunity. So if you're John Hurtman and this team coaching, you're like, you've got to make sure you've got a really strong defensive block, protect the defenders that are a little bit older and a little bit slower, and you're always going to get a chance over the top. And we have in every single game. I mean, this round, you look at Honduras, terrific finish from Jonathan David, great ball as well. You saw that happen in the United States, the second goal in behind goal. So that pace has been absolutely, you know, a killer and a game changer for the way John Herdman has been able to set his team up. I mean, every coach can only dream about having the pace of Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David and many of the other players that they have. So that's always given that out. Our problem in the past has been we defend well, but we've never, like, how are we ever going to get behind the defenders and behind them? That didn't scare them because all their defenders were quicker than our attackers. So that's really a difficult tactical situation for a manager to deal with. That pace kills, and that has been a big part of this team. And John Herdman has not missed a beat. And Milan Borjan, at 34 years of age, I mean, people might think that's, well, certainly on the back end of your career, but you're really in the moment. I mean, when I won the Gold Cup in 2000, I was 34, 35, and most comfortable part of my career. I think you're in the peak of your career, probably at 33, 32 as a goalkeeper with that experience. And he's certainly doing that. He's playing better than he ever has. So I really hope that he can get one more big move too, because he's playing at Serbia for Red Star. They're doing brilliantly well, but it's not a league that pays a lot, and he's not going to be making a ton of money. So he's going to be looking for a move where he can possibly cash in on this and, you know, leverage it a little bit. So let's hope he can for his sake, because he certainly deserves it. And the other goalkeepers that we played against, some of them, you know, higher up on the ladder as far as probably great goalkeepers that we've seen, like Ochoa from Mexico, who, you know, you got Boyan making unbelievable saves at one end, and he got Ochoa that was at fault for both goals. And then the American goal, first goal, straight through the goalkeeper, should have saved it. We can go back to Haiti, that goalkeeper, that mistake. Like, there's been lots of goalkeeping mistakes, and we haven't had any. Well, I'll say that he's got away with a few things. He does a little bit of walk around, but the shot-stopping ability is absolutely spot on. And John knows his strengths, and he plays to them. So if you're looking at, for instance, say Manchester City, that a lot of people are familiar, might have watched play, and Pep Guardiola, how he plays that type of game. That's not going to happen because Milan Borjan is not that type of, has that comfort on the ball, you see. So he keeps everything in a position where he can play to his strengths. And he, like I said, he's done that well, even with the goalkeeper. And he's wily, he's clever, he's experienced with the dark arts of the game. He doesn't care. He's your working class goalkeeper that's just absolutely everybody is loving to see. And the gray pants are just a bonus, which he didn't have on last night because I guess it's a little warmer.
He blew it, though. You want to talk about money opportunities? He's got to keep branding the pants. Like, that's got to be the thing, the sweats. And had he just had he worn the sweats in the heat? Exactly.
You can sell those pants for, probably make them for 25 cents, sell them for
exactly.
20, and, right?
Yes. Where is Borjan's manager? Like, okay, man, you want to make cash? Just sweatpants brand. Borjan sweatpants brand. Like, that's popping off right now. That's going to end up hugely successful. So you mentioned the heat, though, and you mentioned the change in pitch. And there were the travel. There were obviously a lot of difficulties going into making sure that this happened. And yeah, the Canada looked a little sluggish. And it was good that they ended up getting those subs in there. But you look at some of the minutes these guys have been playing. It's been a pretty heavy workload, travel, schedule, everything, right? But I'm curious to get your perspective on what it's like to play in hostile environments like that. Because what is it like as a player when you beat a team and everyone surrounding you wants you dead? Like, they're throwing beers. They're throwing beers from the top row. They got the riot squad outside. Like, I went to the game in Hamilton. I also went to the game at BMO against El Salvador here. There's no riot police. Like, you know, there's nobody hanging around in shields. Nobody's whipping beers down over the fence. That's just a half full stadium, that one. And still, it's just terrifying.
Yes, it is. And I actually did some radio for El Salvador, San Salvador Radio, before the game. And I was asking about that. Is there restrictions? And they're like, yeah, there is restrictions. There's also a loss of faith in the team, even after they threatened not to play. Not all the support was for the players, because they feel as though they haven't shown enough passion and performed well enough for their country. So they're under a lot of pressure, you know, as players as well. So the differences were massive. So they got a break there. The timing was excellent, because the same thing with Honduras. Going to Honduras, it's a lion's den. I mean, really, literally, I had some of the ex-players going, my God, it was like a pillow fight. I mean, it was like I was honestly scared for my life coming out of Tegucigalpa. And here we are on the day that they play Honduras. Again, they're bottom of the league, lost some interest. And there's inauguration of their first woman president on the same day. And there's a lot of hope around politics and future for the Honduran people, who have been absolutely shafted forever and ever. So that was good for Canada. So everything, like you said, the stars aligned perfectly, you know, how things have worked out. And they haven't really had to experience those crazy situations in Central America that we usually do. They probably enjoyed it as much as they possibly could, but it would have been nothing like it can be, fortunately for Canada.
Yeah, well, I don't understand it. It's just like I'm like the mentality of, I'm not trying to excuse poor fan behavior, but it is kind of funny when I'm watching the NBA, right? I'm watching a game, and there's a fan gets ejected because they say, like, you're a boy to a player. And it's like, that guy's banned for life. And then I'm watching the soccer game, and the guy falls down the sideline. It's beer cans are whipped over the side. It's like, hey, buddy, play on, play on. I don't think anybody got ejected from the Honduras crowd, or sorry, from the El Salvador crowd last night. Like, I think everybody got to stay in their seats. It was okay.
It was interesting, wasn't it? Because I saw those riot cops or military in the corner with the shields. And I was wondering, okay, they're in the shield. There's not a lot of people around. And then as soon as there was a corner, and the boys come to the corner to take the corner, they held their shields up to protect the guy from taking an abundance of whatever coming down out of the crowd, right? So it's like they absolutely knew it. And also the Federation of El Salvador know that they can't afford to have somebody like a Canadian player hit or hurt by a missile coming from the crowd. So they've literally got these guys protecting them. It's absolutely insane. It's just, it's nuts. I mean, you did talk about, you know, some of the performances too. And another thing we have to remember, in the minutes that they played, a lot of these guys coming out of MLS, them played since November, you know. So you've got, you know, Kay that didn't play particularly well in Hamilton. I think that's down to minutes that he hasn't played. Osorio's coming off an MLS season. There's a number of them. You know, Tejon Buchanan's make that move over to Bruges and Belgium, and he played 45 minutes a couple of weeks ago before he made the move to Canada back to play. We got Richie Larea trying to settle in at Nottingham Forest. He signs for them. He's had to come back for visa reasons, go back to Nottingham Forest. He's had about 3 training sessions with them, back again for national team. So a lot of this goes on around too. So there's tons of other travel and emotional stuff about, you know, signing for new clubs that you're trying to focus on too. Because at the end of the day, for the players, the club level is their bread and butter. That's one of the reasons when the country wasn't doing particularly well over the last 20 years, why people would probably want to avoid it. Junior Hoylett's an example of that. He didn't play for Canada. He turned down Canada for years and years and years and concentrated just on club football until it was a benefit, or he needed Canada to maybe put him in the shop window for another club. So that's changed. I'm getting calls all the time. I had a call this morning. There's a 17-year-old boy in Bristol City that's Canadian-born. Do you know him? Let's get him looked at. Highly rated. We need center backs. A little bit on the young side, but, you know, down the road, we were going to need center backs. So everybody wants to play for Canada now. Tomori, the guy, the Canadian that was playing for Chelsea, now playing in Italy, he's now tied to England. Unfortunately, that last Euro that he made an appearance in qualifying, that basically took away any opportunity for him to make the switch, because the rules have changed a little bit about playing for countries and making one switch. So that was unfortunate, because he would have been our center back and a world-class one at that for the next 10 years. Unfortunately, we missed him.
Craig. I love hearing that, though, the enthusiasm around the program, the future of it as well. Craig Forrest, Canadian soccer legend and co-host of the Footy Prime podcast. Appreciate you coming on this morning, man. Talk soon.
Yeah, guys, nice. Thanks very much. Have a great day. And let's enjoy this run together and all the bandwagon jumpers. I don't care. Let's have fun. This is jump on the train.
Yeah, all the bandwagon jumpers, you know, we'll see who you are. You know, who are you? We'll see. Craig Forrest, see you, buddy. Thanks, man.
Pleasure.
Yeah, no, like, we don't know.
It's great to let the bandwagoners on. By the way, that look at the Canadian men's national
team. If Craig and I are saying the bandwagoners are okay, then it's okay. You know, if it's Craig and I, number one soccer fan, number one soccer legend, two of us combining to say that it's okay to jump on the bandwagon, it's okay for you guys to come along.
Right? I was just going to say it's like without you setting the tone and bringing to the public consciousness Canadian soccer, I don't know if Craig even gets into soccer.
That's right.
Back 35, 40 years ago.
That's right. Chicken or egg situation. It's a chicken or egg.
That look at the Canadian men's national soccer team was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed. Pro all the way. Thanks to CertainTeed for helping us tee up and debrief this window for Canada soccer. It's done. We're done until March 24th now. It'll be clinch officially. The March 24th game will be awesome because barring a very unlikely scenario of games, that'll be the day Canada officially clinches for the World Cup. That'll be a blast. I don't know if those last two games will be as interesting, but... hey, that one will be fun. March 24th. No soccer tonight. We do have Raptors Bulls 7:30 on Sportsnet. We've got your Wake and Rake, of course, which is Suns -5.5, the Russian women's hockey team -1.5, and the Miami Heat on the money line. We're going to have a great show tomorrow.
I am starting to get a little worried about that Russian pick, but you know what? I'm going to have faith in it. I got a couple people texting me about, the COVID situation. It's fine. I'm going to stick with it.
I tried. You shot me down when I brought up the COVID situation.
It's okay.
It's too late now. The money's in.
The money's in. It's good.
The money's in.
Jamie put a lot of money on, so that's why
I went full Ailish as well and just threw it down. We got to go. Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast. Rate, review, all that good stuff. At JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. I'm Blake Murphy. We'll talk to you tomorrow. The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.